Welcome to Federal Insights for September, modernizing government to deliver digital services, sponsored by Hughes Network Systems.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Tom Temin. One agency on the forefront of federal network development is one that provides network capabilities across the defense establishment, namely the Defense Information Systems Agency. For a look at what's ahead, including software-defined wide area networking, or SD-WAN, I spoke with the technical director of DISA's Infrastructure Directorate, Brian Doyle.
Let's start with just framing this all in. As the technical director for infrastructure, does that mean DISA's own infrastructure, or do you have a role in what the armed services that use DISA services also do?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? So it's my role as the technical director, so I have an oversight of our architecture for our global backbone that we support for the DoD. And then what that does is that serves as an enabler for all the warfighting users and the services. So, you know, part of my job is inward focused, where we work on our network and we behave, you know, much like a global carrier, or like a very large company to build our backbone. So we do a lot of vendor outreach in that regard. And then on the other side is we do a lot of technical outreach to our customers, right? So we sit down with the, you know, services and, you know, DoD agencies and, you know, federal partners and, you know, really work on, you know, how they can best use our environment. So I've kind of got a little bit of split personality in that role.
And DISA has always been integrated and networked into the larger defense enterprise. And by networked, I mean organizationally, not technically, but maybe that also. But just review for us how that all works, how the plumbing works with DISA as the one time the switch circuit provider and now the network provider.
No, absolutely. So, DISA, like the role we do, right? And DISA has multiple roles, right? So I'm going to talk, you know, primarily what I do for the networking side. You know, my colleagues do, you know, all sorts of really cool things, you know, on cybersecurity, on, you know, applications and compute hosting that are, that are completely focused on warfighter support. So what we do is we kind of serve as the foundational layer, right? So we run the Defense Information Systems Network that provides high-speed military connectivity to, you know, all of our warfighters globally. And that is the, like I mentioned before, that's kind of the foundational layer of our of our environment. And as you mentioned, right, you know, we started with capacity and circuits and, you know, very, you know, legacy technologies. And as we modernize forward, right, we kind of want to mimic the commercial environment in terms of, capacity, like I mentioned a minute ago, you know, routing optimization and, you know, other core technologies.
And just give us from your point of view of doing this for many years in the Navy before this and now at DISA, what do you think are the mega trends in network technology and in network approaches?
Sure. So there's a couple things we have to be mindful of is the capacity, right? So as we get capacity, there's demand, right? Demand's never going to go away. That's a common theme from commercial stuff. So some of the, you know, core technologies and fiber optic transmission, you know, fiber deep networks, you know, really are helping us there. There's a notion on availability, right? So we want to make sure we're super available. If we're doing things like cloud computing where the network is tethered, we become incredibly critical to the cloud environment. So we need to be super available. Cybersecurity is absolutely critical to everything we do, right? So we must be more secure. Evidence on, you know, supply chain risk management, you know, security of our internal backbone, as well as our customer connections to us. There's a huge emphasis on that side. And then what becomes really challenging is we put all those pieces together, it exceeds what people can do on the keyboard. So in the past, you know, folks would, you know, type commands into routers or optical switches or telephone switches. But in this converged environment, we really can't do that without helper systems, right? And those helper systems are in the form of automation and capacity. Capacity management, you know, service orchestration, being able to provision capacity, you know, right away. And then also being able to maneuver our infrastructure, which kind of sets the stage for, you know, software-defined networking, you know, software-defined, you know, wide area networks that help us to better improve, you know, ultimately our user experience, which is a commitment to our warfighting, you know, customers, and then, you know, really improve the, you know, way we behave as a carrier so that we can deliver things at cost, right? We don't want to, you know, increase the cost of things. We want to be very mindful of, you know, our cost back to the, you know, warfighters and to the taxpayers. So we have a financial responsibility, and that's the market helps us with that, with good competition and good engagement on those technologies.
Sure. Nobody has unlimited money for this, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yep, there's no unlimited money. It's, we have to be responsible. And like, it's how we do that is we, like the way we ask questions to industry, right, is we ask questions to industry that are of, you know, current technologies, right? So if I ask for something that's really old and I'm the only person that asked for that, that's kind of like a basic economic, you know, thing, right? If you, like, it's sure, we'll build it for you, but we're going to charge you more. So as we evolve and become better with, you know, like a better alignment to technologies and capacities, you know, we can, you know, the costs can sort of scale linearly, right? We keep a good cost profile as we increase, you know, robustness, diversity, like in all the illities that we spoke about before.
And if you would give us an update on the degree to which the military's networks are wires that are owned and operated by the agencies, and to which extent they run over, say, in a encrypted version on commercial networks. I mean, I remember back in the days when they disconnected the AutoDIN, which was wiring totally operated by the military. They had to use wire cutters to change networks. How much is commercial? How much is government operated and owned these days?
You know, we still look at it as we assemble our raw materials, right? So I mentioned before, like, it's how we assemble our environment. The details of how we do it, I'm not going to go into that. That's sort of the secret sauce, right? There has to be some degree of mystery. But, you know, ultimately, right, we assemble our infrastructure, you know, from commercial sources. So, you know, that kind of leads into our EIS conversation that I think we're going to have a little bit later.
Yep.
EIS is one of those sources. You know, things as, you know, fiber, what's called an indefeasible right of use. So that's us, you know, procuring a long-term lease. And there's multiple sources that we assemble to build our environment, right? And the percentages and, you know, how we do it and what vendors, you know, obviously we're not going to talk about in this environment.
Right. No, we wouldn't expect you to talk about source selection at this point with
all that stuff,
pending. But there's also the mixture of what the military services, the armed services, and some of the other defense agencies operate of their own versus what DISA provides. And how does that balance work out?
Yeah, so we kind of have two roles at DISA for that. For the stuff that's on our network and the Defense Information Systems Network that, you know, I run in my ARP that I don't run, I'm the chief engineer for, like, an infrastructure. Like, if we carry that traffic as on net, right, we can move the services as an overlay network or like a variety of different, you know, technologies that have a lot of commercial, you know, analogies. Additionally, DISA has a role per instruction of being the bandwidth broker, you know, for customers. So if a customer's off the net, it's a location that I can't service on our existing environment, our Defense Information Technology Contracting Office will, you know, broker those arrangements for them, like an off-net span or a tail lease. So it's, we serve to help our military customers that if they're a place that, you know, we're not built out at, you know, we're happy to work with them and serve as that, you know, government bandwidth broker and, you know, go to something like EIS or, you know, other fiber contracts or, you know, contracts that we have available to be able to assemble that connectivity.
Brian Doyle is Technical Director for the Defense Information Systems Agency's Infrastructure Directorate. More of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
2020 has been a year of challenges, and yet government agencies are being called upon to deliver even more. More services, more applications, and more devices. The fastest way to meet this demand? By transforming your legacy infrastructure into a next-generation digital network. Learn more with Hughes Complimentary White Paper, The Government Agency's Guide to Network Transformation. Visit our website at government.hughes.com/WTOP to download your copy and see how Hughes can help transform your network to deliver more.
Welcome back to our interview with Brian Doyle, Technical Director for the Defense Information Systems Agency's Infrastructure Directorate.
Would it be fair to say that there's nothing static about networking and that you are always improving, looking to the next generation, looking to the next set of capabilities? And what's your process for network planning and capacity planning and architecture and design and engineering planning?
Yeah, so there's a lot of good analogies, right? I mentioned that parts of DISA, you know, we have roles where, like, there's parts of what I do. I'm a large telecom network, right? I service telecom, you know, services, like I mentioned, to our military customers on net. There's parts of us as a very large enterprise provider, right? We have over 4 million DoD personnel that we provide enterprise services to. And then we also serve as that sort of, you know, last mile connective tissue between, you know, the DoD environment and our commercial cloud partners, right? So like how can we securely exchange information in those environments? So because of that, there's not a cut and dry, I just, you know, take this playbook and do it. We have to assemble our strategy from those different sort of, you know, personas or dimensions to what we do. So there's a lot of vendor outreach. There's a ton of engagement where we want to understand what our, you know, what our industry partners are doing in terms of technology, fiber builds, new routes, right? You know, sources of material to us. And then the network planning follows a very structured process where we do a lot of, it's actually a lot of mathematical analysis where we look at, you know, demand curves, and do, you know, plotting of where, you know, forecasts would come to us. It's actually called qualitative network analysis. And it's a very sort of statistical group. I mean, we have a team at DISA that does our network planning and, you know, the mathematical models that we do to help us bound, like I mentioned before, capacity, availability, and ultimately the cost profile.
And I guess over the years, the protocols have converged and now pretty much IP is the protocol used for all forms of network activity, from voice to data and so on, all the imagery. Tell us more about that and how that's affected network planning and capacity planning.
Yeah, so there's a couple parts. It's not just IP, right? If we cut the cake, right, we have the IP layer, we have our optical layer, we have our fiber layer. There's some protocols that we can abstract away. But, you know, ultimately, right, from a service perspective, you know, we do want to carry, you know, just IP traffic. So as we work to our customers, there's a lot of policy that talks about, you know, migrating away from two-wire circuits, like you mentioned, or, you know, very low-speed TDM. There's some unique corner cases where, you know, things like you know, elevators, right, that have a two-wire that has to go talk to something else. We have to find a way to carry that traffic. But, you know, ultimately, right, we're carrying it as IP. So, you know, we have kind of a few different approaches to that, you know, really focused on, you know, making sure the mission availability for what we carry and our warfighters that we support. So, you know, there are folks that traditionally would say, you know, like a voice call, you know, had this parameter or this capability. And now we look to do that in, as, you know, IP modeling. So there's some different performance characteristics that our modeling group brings in. And then as we map the availability down to just say that I can provide the same service with IP via, you know, dedicated T1 or like a very explicit path through our network, you know, that ties us to, you know, one of our focus areas too, which is, you know, guaranteeing our service level agreement, right? Our SLA is our promise to our customers, right? Just like any carrier, like that's how we define our availability, our restoration infrastructure, and being able to, you know, communicate with our customers and say that by using things, you know, like IP, like modern infrastructure on the optical side, you know, automation and instrumentation, that, you know, we can guarantee the same, you know, service promise or better than what we had on the legacy environment. Like, and that's one of our conversations that we do, you know, like across the DoD about, you know, how do we improve the service environment so that we can carry, you know, like a multitude of protocols and capabilities across our infrastructure, but it's not tied to our core. Because if we were to tie it to our core, you know, that creates cost, that creates complexity, that creates a lot of things that, you know, multiple carriers, right, that they have the same issues, right? There's still, you know, there's still elevators in buildings, there's still elevators, there's fire alarms, there's all these very legacy systems that you can't build a new building for, but the data is super important. And if we look at it from that way, you know, we can support a critical modernization of our infrastructure and still be able to support some of those corner cases and things you just, you know, really can't get rid of out of the network.
Got it. And then the other piece of integration, if you will, I guess that's kind of what we've been talking about, is the growth in use of cloud computing and not just simply data centers. In fact, in its legacy, DISA operated the mega centers, which were like that 90s version of the cloud. But now commercial clouds have come in, and that's complicated the networking situation too. Some extent. Explain how you inculcate cloud in.
Yeah, so it's a little interesting where the, you know, what one of my peers explained to me is we're kind of in back to the future, right? We had the mainframe computers, or we had the Think clients and the VAX computers, and now, you know, we're hosting these incredible compute loads, and these incredible infrastructures, and these super transformative things. But, you know, ultimately the cloud is a very large data center, right? So what that does to the network is, I wouldn't say it complicates the environment. It just has to change our thinking a little bit, where the way we would couple that traffic, or before we look at, like, you know, client to server transactions on a micro scale, and now we have, you know, multiple cloud transactions where the bandwidth, the availability, the capacity, and the way, you know, the way that apps and protocols behave is just different from the traditional mindset. So what we do is we just, like, as part of our network planning and our network design stuff, you know, we understand what that does. And we want to do it at the micro scale. Well, this is, you know, one user accessing a cloud service. And then we understand very intimately and very intricately of how every little part of that works, right? Of how that transaction talks. And then we understand what happens when it scales, where I take one user and make it 10 million users or something, right? And those, the engineering doctrine for that is there's this very interesting area on a reliability theory and reliability engineering. That's one of those areas that, we're trying to bring into our network planning focus. When we think about it, ultimately there is a mathematical, model and calculations that can do that. And, what we're trying to do is, it's understanding how it works on the small scale and what happens when we multiply it up. And then we can, look at it from a very standard, mechanism.
And for many reasons, and this is part of the heart of the conversation that I wanted to get to with you, is many organizations are looking at the next, level of virtualization and going to software-defined wide area networks. Are you looking at that? And what are the reasons for this technology?
Yeah, sure. So we're looking at software-defined networking as part of that, technology evolution and software-defined wide area network. There's a letter that differences between the two. And on the SD-WAN side, like I mentioned before, the complexity gets a little bit crazy, right? As we look at the number of sites and number of users, you can't do it on spreadsheets. You can't do the other things. And then ultimately, some of those cloud things that we talked about, it's the way those flows work, right? The way certain transactions work, don't really follow the way a classical MPLS network would work, or some of the things from the late 2000s, early 2010s. If you try to make the network do stuff, you can introduce complexity. Where the thing that SD-WAN is incredibly powerful for us, it allows us to shift the traffic. Where if we're going to cloud centers and moving different types of flows around, And ultimately, one of the other things about SD-WAN that's very interesting is it can be a transport media agnostic. So that means it can run on optical, internet, cell sites. Those are a lot of the corporate use cases. So we are definitely looking at it from a technical, from a technical perspective. Internally to our network, depending on our persona that we mentioned, right, it might not fit exactly. But on the enterprise side, where we're the service provider for one of the world's largest enterprises, it becomes very interesting to help us improve the availability and also optimize the user experience, right? So we can have these super immersive apps. If there's some magic behind the curtain on how the routing and the technology works, it's SD-WAN is a foundational element that would allow us to abstract that away. So we don't have to write super complicated stuff. The software and the algorithms as a part of the SD-WAN overlay are an enabler for us.
It sounds like the SD-WAN then can be also a scaling enabler by just simply having more instances in a given situation without investing in lots of new physical circuitry.
Yeah, there's some different areas on that, right? And again, if we were, one of the great use cases with SD-WAN is a lot of the branch offices, so like banks and stores and Starbucks and coffee shops and everything. It's a way to be able to deliver IT to those folks, right? And you don't have to do these big builds, right? I think there's a lot of interest in that. But again, we really have to make sure we understand the cybersecurity dimensions so that we control the automation and also the end-to-end delivery of services.
Brian Doyle is Technical Director for the Defense Information Systems Agency's Infrastructure Directorate. I'll be back with the third and final segment of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
2020 has been a year of challenges, and yet government agencies are being called upon to deliver even more. More services, more applications, and more devices. The fastest way to meet this demand? By transforming your legacy infrastructure into a next-generation digital network. Learn more with Hughes' complimentary white paper, The Government Agency's Guide to Network Transformation. Visit our website at government.hughes.com/WTOP to download your copy and see how Hughes can help transform your network to deliver more.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of our interview with Brian Doyle, Technical Director for the Defense Information Systems Agency's Infrastructure Directorate.
I wanted to ask about cybersecurity for software-defined networks, because when you suppose you spin down a instance and then in your image you do an update because of cybersecurity to some element in that network. The question is, when you spin up another instance that you spun down, is it also updated from a cybersecurity standpoint? That's getting a little bit into the weeds, but I've heard that problem expressed, or that challenge expressed.
Yeah, so there's some interesting things where it's a, a merger of the network geeks, the virtualization geeks, and the cybersecurity geeks is kind of the way I would propose that. So there's a lot of technologies, and ultimately the SD-WAN engine, you know, run, or the little, you know, virtual container, you know, runs on a server, a Windows box, a Linux box or something. So there's a lot of, you know, best practices that we can learn, you know, from our folks that secure a lot of the, you know, like our compute environment, but, you know, like the way we automate that and the security rules we apply, you know, comes from our cybersecurity directorate, where they, you know, give us those rules. And then us on the network SME, right, it's we sort of, you know, would lay out, you know, how the traffic would behave in those service models. So if you put all those together, I've talked about models and things, you know, surprise, I'm an engineer. But it gives us a way to handle that at scale, right? When we look at it, you know, like we wouldn't ask our network engineers to build a super complex, you know, software thing. We go talk to the software people. And by using, you know, APIs and abstracting away the domain complexity, you know, the network geekiness, the cybersecurity geekiness, and, you know, the compute geekiness, it's, you know, that gives us a foundation so that we can, you know, merge the three together and ultimately operate at scale.
And for the clients, the people that are consuming what it is that you produce in, say, a software-defined wide area network, what does it do to their jobs? And do they need engineering talent to be able to consume this type of service from DISA?
Well, so this is where there's an interesting, you know, there's a lot of corporate articles about SD-WAN as a service where we want to abstract it away. So if they can talk to us, if we can make ourselves, you know, programmable, where the, you know, this is a research area, you know, that we're looking at, and there's a lot of other corporate analogies to this, where if, you know, our environment is programmable, with the cybersecurity concerns and with the other capabilities there, it becomes, you know, it becomes very interesting, where we don't have to have this, you know, this super complexity on all the different routing and optical protocols. We deliver, you know, ease of service and, you know, service velocity, where we don't need all this, you know, complex, what like in the telecom industry is called truck roll, where the truck goes out and builds something. Well, like if there's ways that we can, you know, reduce that complexity on build and service provisioning, you know, ultimately it improves our lethality, right? Because we support the warfighting environment. It improves our service velocity, which is important to deliver on our promises to our customers. And it doesn't, you know, require, you know, senior engineers going out, you know, turning all these knobs. You know, we use that design effort internally, right, to build those schemas and those capabilities so that we can rapidly field an environment that helps improve the user experience when they want to do important stuff, like it's we're there to support them.
And let's talk about user experience a little bit more detail. How do you define user experience when you're talking about what's essentially a utility as opposed to a application with a front end that they interact with? And how do you measure whether it's good or not?
Yeah. And so the measurabilities, right, is we, lots of illies, right? It's, so there's interesting things, you know, ultimately, you know, our human perception is driven by latency, right? That's the one thing we can see, the lag, the delay, the capabilities. And ultimately, you know, latency is the one thing that that kind of physics tells us that we can't cheat on, right? That we can't cheat. So there's this bound of, you know, ways can we, like, so we measure it on, you know, the interactive of the users, right? Making sure their email doesn't span or log delay. The lag is incredibly perceptive. So if there's stuff we can do to speed that up on the network side of the application side, there's some tricks we can do to help improve that. And then ultimately, you know, some transparent stuff on the backside, which is the software engineering, the security, and also the network capabilities that, you know, that help ultimately enable that environment.
Brian Doyle is Technical Director for the Defense Information Systems Agency's Infrastructure Directorate. For more on this interview or to hear it in its entirety, please go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights for September, sponsored by Hughes Network Systems on Federal News Network.